And sorry, I was just going to say, we only had Paulina for feedback, right?
Because I don't think Shane sent feedback for episode 3.
Okay, yeah, he sent for the boys, but that's all I remember. Okay, now you may begin.
Welcome to Ladies with Gumption, episode 88, Bad Dad Club. I am introing this episode. I'm Jessica, and I'm here with...
May.
And Tatiana.
We are the Ladies with Gumption. We recap DCTV in a flash. You can contact us on Twitter at DCTVGumption. You can email us at You can email us at ladieswgumption@gmail.com, or you can send us an ask on Tumblr, ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. You can listen to us on all the things, like the podcast app on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, Facebook, through clicking the link, because I don't think you can listen to us directly from Facebook, but you know what I mean.
You can do the listen to us in spirit on Facebook.
Yeah, listen to us in spirit. Listen to us through osmosis or something. Anyways, we are still doing our Patreon. So if you are a Patreon member, congratulations. You're listening to this episode first. You have first listen. We also are planning on doing some other kind of Patreon exclusives that will only be on the Patreon account. So if you are interested in other things, not necessarily DC. So for example, like The Boys, or also thinking about doing a review on Elite, Netflix's Elite season 1, season 2, different series like that. So if you're into that and you have a request on something that you want to review and something that you've seen, then you can also send us that way, and that'll be available on Patreon. In the news section, DCEU news. There's a rumor that Matt Reeves' Batman movie is going to be based off of the comic Long Halloween. And I want to get your thoughts on that.
I love that thought. Yeah, that's my thought. I love the Long Halloween. Are you guys hearing my echo?
Yes.
Okay. How do I unecho? How about now? Am I echoing?
You're good.
Okay.
The story?
Can I explain the story? Easily. So, Carmine wants Bruce's help in laundering money. Bruce says, no thank you. Just like a wedding or something that he's out with Selena Kyle. But then it turns out that they find Dent has been, like, beaten up by some of the Falcone mob. So now Bruce and Selena have to help Harvey escape. And Bruce has to investigate Falcone as Batman, but meanwhile Catwoman's doing her own investigation, right? So they start working with GCPD, that I forgot what they were called, so basically it's like the Carmine Falcone squad against Bruce, but then Harvey being Two-Face comes in the mix as well. So
okay. Yeah, and so I feel like this goes back to I think it was Kevin Smith or someone was talking about, because they were talking about, you know, how it's based on like the Long Halloween, and how like a lot of the Batman films haven't really focused or spent a lot of time focusing on Bruce's like detective instinct, because he's supposed to be like the number one detective, but you don't really get to see that side of him a lot in the DCEU movies. So that's kind of something that's to look forward to. And then like going back to last week when we were talking about how there's also a rumor that he wants a woman of color to play Selina Kyle, and seeing how the story is based on Long Halloween and seems to be a lot of Selina in it, I think that could also be some good news. It looks like it's shaping up to be a pretty interesting movie. So hopefully some of these rumors pan out. May, did you have any thoughts on...
I just love it because it has a lot of Selina in it. So that's why I'm really excited.
Yes. So we'll.
That's also the reason I'm excited.
We're thinking more about that. Moving over into DCTV news, Arrow recently announced that Willa Holland is coming back as Thea in a recurring role, and John Barrowman is also back as Malcolm Merlyn. So that's cool. Laurel will join Oliver and Diggle in Oliver's mission for the Monitor. So now it's like the new OTA.
Yeah, pretty much. I think my biggest concern is like how big the Arrow team is getting with regards to all the monitor stuff, because I don't know if that'll like leak into the crossover or not, but I also want to have other people eventually be getting involved. But I'm sure that's like, this is for, I think, mainly for the first three-ish episodes. I don't know anything after that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, with Arrow, because Oliver is helping the monitor prepare, then obviously, at least in their own show, there's going to be a lot of setup towards that compared to the other shows. But as far as Crisis goes, I don't think anybody's getting like a lot of screen time, because they keep
everybody's in it.
And the big news this week was that Tom Welling is going to reprise his role as Clark Kent for Crisis, making a total of three versions of Superman involved in this year's Crisis crossover.
Woo!
And we just found out
more importantly,
the bomb was dropped today that Erica Durance will also be back as Lois Lane
yes.
in multiple episodes of the crossover. Mm-hmm. So, it's all there. It's all the ingredients are in the soup for two daring reporters to meet. The only thing standing in its way is a cook that doesn't know how to season his food called Guggenheim. But hopefully
that's very possible. But
yeah, hopefully when he has his back turned, Eric can add a little flavor in there and get the journalists together for, because that's, I think that's,
I just feel like it would be really, really stupid for a second crossover with not just one Lois, but two Loises, not to
Loi.
Not to interact with the other primary reporter of the Arrowverse, aka Iris, especially especially in a storyline that heavily involves her husband too. So she should be out there with them doing her thing. So I feel like if they're gonna go the route of what happened in the actual comics, where they had, they had Lois reporting, they had Lana reporting, Iris could just be the Lana, and then just have her out there.
I hope so. I really hope so.
I am hopeful, but I also remember last year when we had John Wesley Shipp as his OG Flash, and that was also the only episode he appeared in, and it was mm-hmm. Oliver as Barry Allen, and not Barry as Barry Allen. So,
but speaking of that kind of appearance, I think that, I know they said multiple episodes for this one, so that may be true, but for the most part, like, yes, there's 300 cameos, but they're probably mostly going to be, like, a minute long.
Yeah.
Crisis has a lot of people and needs a lot of people, because you can't show a Crisis if you don't, infinite Earths, if you don't have infinite
Earths. Infinite Earths.
So, that is why we're getting so many characters. I don't think that alone means that our main characters are going to get less. However, when I say our specific main characters that we care about specifically, there is never a guarantee that they'll get a lot. So we'll see about that. I do very much hope that Iris gets to interact with this Lois in particular. But whether or not she does, there is still yet one more Lois. We have three Supermen, right? And technically, now we have two confirmed Loises. There is a third one who also appeared on Supergirl. So, in fact, anyway, we'll see. We'll see if she shows up. That's all.
She's like, I'll hold my feedback until further notice.
Until
further confirmation.
I forgot to put in the Mitch, this is the last name.
Yeah.
The Supergirl news.
Supergirl news. We have two characters confirmed to Supergirl, and they're both kind of ancient aliens.
Always holding on.
So Mitch Pileggi, is that how you say his last name?
Yes.
I guess. Stupid deadline. Don't redirect me. Two, one, come on. Supergirl season 5 casts Mitch Pileggi and Cara Buono as two ancient aliens, and it kind of feels like a interesting concept because they're not, from the descriptions, they're not necessarily villains, but they wind up becoming on the opposite side of our heroes, in which case they are like semi-villains or anti-heroes, or I don't know what you would classify it as, but basically Cara Buono,
antagonist,
thank you, will play Gamine, who is an ancient alien who with others of her kind have been safeguarding the Earth from the follies of humanity throughout the ages, and her aim is to use technology to subjugate humans. She's cunning, witty, ruthless, and always 10 steps ahead of her adversaries, and her agenda puts her into conflict with her would-be allies on a collision course with Supergirl. And then Mitch Pileggi will recur as Rama Khan, an ancient alien who is able to control the four ancient elements of fire, water, earth, and air. He's arrogant and willful and has been entrusted to use his powers to protect Earth from mankind for millions of years, but now his agenda puts him at odds with Supergirl and Lena Luthor. So the thing that I found like really curious is that both of these roles are roles of protecting the Earth, basically from humanity. So when you think about that, and then also the kind of the theme that they were saying about Supergirl this season was kind of Black Mirror and the dangers of technology. I think it sounds like it's a pretty interesting set up for the season. What do you guys think about these two castings?
I was gonna say, are they gonna go the route of like protecting the Earth from humanity because of, I'm like, because we're destroying the Earth, climate change?
Basically, like climate, like it's, this is the climate
eco-terrorism.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I don't know much about them or if they were even in the comics, but like the way this season is shaping up with all these new characters seems to be like fascinating, and I'm wondering if, you know, because they announced the casting now, so maybe they're in the final like 7-8, maybe episode 7 and 8, and then that'll bleed, storyline will bleed into the second half of the season.
Yeah, I feel like that's just kind of set up for their second half, because like Supergirl has that kind of ABC type plot, season plots anyway. And so after Crisis, their new big bad will be these two, I think, in the back half. So that'd be cool.
I wonder if they'll... Oh, they are from the comics. They were introduced in 2002 in the JLA series.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just trying to think, like, because they're ancient aliens, and we do have another ancient alien who's currently visiting John. So I'm like, are they coming, like, from him, with him, you know, or through his storyline, or are they just chilling? Because, I mean, there's aliens
they
everywhere,
could be,
so
like,
they could just be
like,
chilling.
Once, like, the Earths, like, merge into one, that could be, like, their
That's
awakening.
True. Yeah. Or, yeah, they could be, like, aliens from another, you know, Earth. You know what I mean? Like alien, not like, oh, they just come from the Earth. I mean, like another universe.
Yeah,
another Earth universe. And then they come in here and they're like, this one's bad. I don't like this one.
Like, why were we merged into this universe?
Exactly.
I liked my old
universe. Ours was the superior one. Yeah.
Their bodies will reject the ecosystem.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there has to be some kind of comfort about that in general, you know? Like, because once Earths merge, if they are indeed to merge, then things have to be different for everyone that survives it. So, we'll see.
We will see. And then finally, a little bit of Flash news. We got kind of the few episode titles. And episode 605, which is a Cisco-centric episode, is Kiss, Kiss, Breach, Breach. 606, which we talked about, I think, last week, had to do with Ralph. And it was, like, License to Elongate, which to me sounds like kind of a porno film.
That sounds awesome, though. I love it.
But it's on brand for Ralph, I suppose. And then, most importantly, the Flash episode 607, which they are currently filming or just, like, recently finished, is called The Last Temptation of Barry Allen, Part 1. And this is very exciting in the sense that, like, a lot of people already picked up on, it could be a take on The Last Temptation of Christ from the Bible, in which, you know, he sees the life that he could have if he didn't, he wasn't burdened with this, taking on the sin of mankind, dying for mankind's sins.
So, if he wasn't being burdened with being DC's burdened Jesus
with,
Christ.
With our, with being Jesus Christ and having to die for our sins, he could live a fantastic life and be very happy. But in, of course, in the end, he resists this temptation from the devil.
One would assume.
Yeah. And so in The Flash, and how that could kind of play into Barry, of course, knowing that he has to sacrifice himself for all of humanity in crisis. And so, and like, I like the fact that it's two parts, because it's a big deal for him and for Iris. And we know that Candace has been super excited about this episode, and she's been filming a lot, and she looks hella great.
She does. I was gonna say, as soon as she shows up, he'll be like, "Yeah, forget. I'm not gonna sacrifice myself. I'm good."
And didn't she even mention? Didn't she mention like she just filmed a really disgusting scene, but she looked like this beforehand?
Yeah.
So I wonder if that would be like a vision or a original timeline situation where you see like peak Wes Allen or, you know, Iris being like this in this life, and then it's like, oh, reality comes crashing in. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's blood work dumps a bucket of pig's blood on her because it's not what we're doing right now. That was just the first, you know, that's just what I thought, what I imagined. But yeah, I think, well, not specifically pig's blood. I was like literally the villain, like dumping some shit on her. And then Vanessa of something Shark, Vanessa Shark, Nessa Shark, I don't know, someone on Twitter, Nessa Shark, was like, oh, I think it's going to be, you know, gift from Carrie. No, because of the name of the villain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you understand. You understand now. And the hoobles. What was I going to say about it? Right, I mean, I like all the titles. Just to be, you know, I think I love the way that the episodes are being titled this season, but I'm especially excited to see Barry needing to explore the consequences or the potential consequences of Crisis. And I don't know. I'm trying to imagine who might, you know, how this might be visited upon him. Is Speech Force being like, you don't got to do this, bro? Or is it like Anti-Monitor? Who's like, hey.
I feel like it could be Anti-Monitor. Because I think that'd be, because, you know, like it has to be kind of a person that's like, don't die in crisis. You could have this life. I could do this for you, Barry, kind of things. And that seems like kind of an Anti-Monitor type situation. Yeah. And I feel like it could be like the original, like OG timeline, like before the Flash show started, before
that's the one I want to see.
Both his parents married to Iris, they have their kids, he has his life, everything he'd ever imagined, ever wanted in his life on a silver platter.
And I wonder if it's a way of introducing the Paradise Dimension too, like that's where he would go if he opted out, you know what I mean? Like, I'll just send you and Iris here. And then you can just do whatever the fuck you want. and then by the end of it, it would
instead of like, fuck them kids, be like, fuck humanity.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like it has the potential to be like more emotional than the Runaway Dinosaur, which is like sort of not exactly like this, but like it had that a temptation. Like, you could just chill here. Sorry, you were going to say something, Tati?
No, I was talking to Katie because she came in and slammed the door so that I would be quiet.
Yeah, I'm just ready for all the feels.
Yeah, so 607, 608, and then leading into Crisis, it sounds like it's going to just be thebomb.com at the moment. So also, I think, and just briefly, because we got the Flash season premiere episode description, and of course, it mentioned Barry and Iris still grieving the loss of Nora, but it also mentioned that Killer Frost has like a near-death experience that apparently like changes the dynamic between her and Caitlin forever or something like that. And I can't remember. Maybe it's in the feedback. I can't remember where I saw it, but somebody.
Yeah, I think Paulina has it.
Yeah, her theory.
Okay, so let's go into the feedback with Paulina, because I thought it was what she was saying was interesting. I hope you all are doing well and having a good week thus far. I binged the remaining episodes of Titans last weekend, so that would be all cut up for 203 this week. But before I get into it, I have a few DCTV content-related thoughts. You finally got a Black Lightning poster, which is easily the best of the CW DCTV posters released, in my completely unbiased opinion. Is it? Is it unbiased, Paulina? but jokes aside, it's really edited really nicely, and it's super cool. I'm not sure why the other editing teams can't get on Black Lightning's level, but either way, Black Lightning poster is truly amazing. Premiere episode descriptions are also out. I'm curious as to how Jefferson and Lynn are going to navigate through the tough spot that they find themselves in with Agent O'Dell and the ASA, because the 301 description reads that Jefferson and Lynn are now at the hands of the ASA in ways that they haven't been before, while O'Dell tightens the grip on the family. I'm not sure how I feel about Jennifer being abandoned, because even with Anissa apparently defying O'Dell to fight crime, with Gambi aiding her, I don't see either Anissa or Gambi letting Jennifer feel abandoned. So I'm curious to see how tension plays out, and I hope that Jennifer feeling abandoned won't run her back into Khalil's arms, because this storyline was already done
last season,
and I don't want to see the Pierce family fractured again.
Don't put that out in the universe, Tati.
She doesn't know, like, Khalil is, like, alive, and I doubt he knows he's Khalil, so... Yeah, that'll be interesting.
As soon as he sees Jennifer, he's gonna know.
Paulina says she's
sorry ever.
Really looking forward to Anissa defying O'Dell and continuing to protect Freeland by assuming the new alias Blackbird. Love seeing Anissa take matters in her own hands and going out and being the crime-fighting hero she is no matter what. The season 6 premiere of Description of the Flash is a bit more vague. But clearly 601 will tug on the emotional heartstrings, as the first line of description is that Barry and I still have to deal with the heartbreaking loss of Nora. She also... I'm trying to get to the Frost thing. Oh yeah, so there's also the bit about Killer Frost having a near-death experience, which fundamentally alters her dynamic with Caitlin. So I'm thinking that perhaps Killer Frost becomes a dominant personality, with Caitlin only coming out from time to time when she's needed rather than vice versa. And I do think that that's really interesting, because we know, if you kind of piece together from what Eric has said and what Daniela said that we'll be seeing a lot more of Killer Frost and her dynamics with the team. And then Eric, in the way that he talks about Killer Frost, he's clearly a fan of the comic version of Killer Frost. And so I could understandably see if, you know, a little bit frustrated with that not coming out fully on the show and wanting to do more with Killer Frost.
And now she's back with a vengeance.
Yeah, like, rather than just having her, like, pop up as, like, a party trick, like, actually developing and going into that. And I don't know if Sterling Gates, is he still on the writing staff for The Flash this season or not?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. So, I mean, and then, you know, it's just seeing as it's Sterling's character, then maybe he'll get more of a chance to kind of flesh her out. So I think it would be really interesting if that's what it is. Because, like, you know, how possibly could you alter the dynamic between two people that are in the same body that we haven't done already? And the only thing that I think could do that is if you flip it so that Killer Frost is the dominant one and Caitlin is in the background, which now I'm thinking, like, it's a near-death experience. Like, Caitlin almost dies and then, like, in season 3, and then Killer Frost comes out and is out for good, or what?
And I wonder if Caitlin is the one to Caitlin almost die. Up. Or, like Killer Frost gets into protective mode or something and just, like, kind of takes over control.
Yeah, that's what I was imagining. I was imagining something happens to Caitlin and Killer Frost is like, I am tired. I will take the wheel like Jesus. And now he will just survive.
Yeah, so Paulina's on to something.
Yeah, I definitely think that. And I just lost the email. Damn it. Hold on. I think I accidentally deleted it. That's
oh no,
wrong.
Wait, is it in the trash?
I'm looking in the trash. Where the fuck is this email?
Did you archive it?
Paulina. I have no idea. What did I do? Shit.
Hold on. Go to all mail. I'm going to send it back into the main one. Hold on.
Okay, I see it. Sorry. Cut all of that.
I don't want Paulina to know you almost deleted her email.
And then moving into briefly some of her Titans feedback. She says, in her opinion, Ghost was easily the best episode of the season thus far, but I'm just going to come out and say this. I don't care about the old Titans. I watched the show for the core four, Dick, Corey, Rachel, and Gar, and I don't care about the dissension in politics between the old Titans, and I sure as hell don't care about Hank and Don and their boring storyline. She really enjoyed Ghost. We get lots of background on Corey's lineage, and I love how this slowly revealed that she'd been kidnapped by her family's royal guards at the behest of Blackfyre, who wants Corey to assume her role as Queen of Tamaran. So a lot of Corey backstory. That was really good. For the others, Rachel really unleashed her darker side on Jason, although he was definitely unnecessarily harsh to her in the aftermath. Overall, Jason's having a tough time in Ghost, as the episode literally ends with Gar finding a pool of blood, but no Jason. Granted, it was somewhat of a stupid decision on Jason's part to have him and Gar go after Dr. Light alone at the end, but that's par for the course for Jason. Also, she is looking forward to more Titans facing Deathstroke. What I'm not here for is the talk that I'm hearing about potentially having more Dick Dawn flashbacks to explore the emotional politics of Dick Dawn's relationship. This is so stupid. And whoever's holding on to the ship, cough Gabriel Stanton, who loves her Wonder Bread shifts, cough, needs to let it go. Is she still on the show? Because if she is...
I don't know if she is, but she's not the showrunner.
She's not the showrunner. But I think what...
It's the showrunner who said that he wants to do
it. In case you didn't know, the showrunner recently did like a interview about season two in general. And one of the things is like they're having two flashback episodes. And he talks about really loving going into the politics of the old Titans, but the only old Titans relationships that he actually mentions that he likes exploring is Dick and Dawn's, or like the triangle of why Dawn left Dick and got with Hank and all this other like bullshit, which I don't care. I really don't care about. I don't know. We'll get into that in our episode feedback. So I'm going to reel it back in. And yeah. So back to Paulina. She says, you know, she actually wants to spend more time with the main ship, which is Dick Corey. I know we'll get to see Dick Corey this season, but I don't need this exploration of past Dick Dawn garbage that's literally going nowhere narratively and is therefore a complete waste of screen time, which I definitely agree. She's excited for the rest of the season, though, and Corey's storyline. So thank you, Paulina. Her feedback in full will go on the Tumblr.com. But now we have kept you waiting long enough, because I know that you are all on hooks. What is it called? Hooks and tenders, or hooks and needles? Pins and needles?
Pins and needles. Tender hooks. Needles.
We could do hooks and needles, tender too.
Hooks. Hooks and needles.
You could.
Because we know you're
ready
bitches.
To get stabbed.
Y'all are kinky bitches, and you like hooks and needles, so. Here is, we were talking about the Titans all day, every day, and Tatiana is our host, and she's going to take us through what the fuck happened on Titans this week. Tatiana.
Or at least I will try. So, Titans, Season 2, Episode 3, Ghosts, with the reemergence of the dumbass Dr. Light, the old Titans reluctantly returned to Titan's Tower to prepare to face their old enemy, whom they previously were almost defeated by in ways unbeknownst to myself. But the secrets of Titan's past, which I am unclear on, threatened to tear apart this newly formed team from within. While the old Titans questioned Dick's acceptance of Rose Wilson, the best new character on the show, into their midst, the new Titans start to wonder about the unspoken tragedy, and so do I, that disbanded the group years before. Meanwhile, a sexy old friend from Corey's home planet of Tamaran comes to Earth with an urgent mission to bring her back and make her his queen. And they talk, and they have emotional intimacy, and they have great chemistry, and he steals a jewel for her. And She's like, I don't want to go back. And he's like, but I'll die if you don't. And then she's like, well, then I guess I'll go back. But then Rachel's like, but I'll die if you don't come here. And then Corey's like, I guess I won't go back. And there we are. So, that's what you missed on Glee. Now, what sparked joy about Titans, ladies?
Well, I think definitely in this episode, objectively, the most interesting storyline is Corey's. It sparked all kinds of joy for me. I like that we picked up immediately what happened to her in this next episode and didn't leave her disappearance like a mystery that none of the other Titans were planning on caring about. So I like that she's not just discarded in that sense. I feel like we never got... Do we ever get Soldier Dude's name? Royal Guard member?
I think one Royal Guard I banged is his name.
I think she mentioned him once, but that's it.
I don't think we ever got his name. And I'm really bad at picking up on, like, names of new characters that get introduced. So I, like, did I just miss it? But I don't think we got his name.
Because
but
the tragedy anyway, is we don't have the subtitles to help us here.
He was fine. And I really liked him as a character. And I loved his dynamic with Corey. I liked the little twist. Like, it didn't reveal... everything about their relationship or who he was or how she knew him or didn't know him or how well she knew him immediately. It was kind of like unraveling like a little onion throughout the course of their scenes together. So I thought that was really nice. And I did like the twist that, you know, he's not just some mercenary or some guard. They were actually had like a connection. They actually knew each other. They were friends. And so, you know, like there's kind of this, is this a bad guy or not? But knowing that they had this relationship when they were younger, you know, it's someone that's not going to like hurt her or anything like that. And so it's kind of like the princess and her knight, which is really nice. I did get a little bit of whiplash though, with regards to like season one, Corey, who knew none of the things. And now suddenly in season two, she knows all of the things. So that was a little confusing, but I did like that we get to see more of Tamaran culture through their kind of walk down memory lane. So we get to know more about the dynamics in Tamaran and the kind of class structure there. And I thought it was, yeah, I'll talk about that later. I also like that he had a little bit of alienness to him and that certain Earth cultures are still unfamiliar or new to him. Like, you know, like how he was like watching cartoons or ordering room service, you know, and the concept of like stealing is illegal and you shouldn't do smash and grabs. Even if it's for a very pretty girl. So I like how there's still that kind of like awkward, like I am not actually from here. Little alienness that for, because I think with Corey, she's been here so long and for most of that she had amnesia. So she was able to kind of fully assimilate into Earth. So it's kind of nice to see this fresh onto the Earth type character kind of interact and with everything being like a different universe. So I thought that was cool.
By the way, his name is Fade.
There we go.
Fade?
Yeah, I don't know how you pronounce it because I don't remember them saying it, but it says F-A-D-D-E-I.
I think she said it like Fade. That's why it, Fade. Yeah.
Fade. Okay. Fade. I like that he gave her her phone back immediately and that she immediately called Donna to let her know that she was okay and not to worry and that she didn't, like, ghost her. And, like, their phone conversation was probably my second favorite scene because it was so soft and such a contrast to, like, the snarky bickering of the previous episode where they were kind of, like, you know, kind of like sisters bickering. And then this one is more really soft. And Donna was definitely kind of low-key hurt, I think, when she thought Corey ghosted on her. Because when she got to Titan's Tower and Rachel asked about her, she's kind of like a little bit dismissive. Like, oh man, I guess she went to Florida. But I think she was like low-key. They thought there was something there. And then so having Corey ghost on her kind of hurt her feelings. But I was glad. That's another reason why I was glad they had that phone conversation. So it was good to see that both of them were still okay with each other. And I also feel like they were kind of protecting each other in that moment by withholding info. So Corey not really telling Donna that she was kidnapped by Tamaran guards who wanted to go home. And Donna not telling her about Deathstroke and Dr. Light. Because in my mind, they both knew that the other would, like, drop everything and come to the rescue. So they're kind of, like, keeping each other right. a little bit. And now if only the show would stop trying to drown Dick with the anchor that is Don Hink and allow him to have reactions to anything going on in Corey's life, we'll be set. Like, I really love the Donna and Corey scene, but I also feel like there hasn't been any kind of, like, reaction to Dick about Corey, or I feel like they're further apart in season two than they were in season one.
And that's alike.
Yeah. But my favorite scene, going back to what I did like, my favorite scene was probably Rachel's phone call to Corey being the thing that finally will bring Starfire to San Francisco. I know I was annoyed, like, last week that Rachel was had, like, a daddy complex for Dick, but I'm glad this episode showed, or reiterated, that she loves her mom, too. And I like that she was able to talk to Corey about what's going on with her, even though she couldn't talk to Dick. It's like she had, like, her magical period, and you can't really talk to your dad about that. It's only something you talk to your mom about.
I like that.
So, yeah, I love their relationship, and I love that Corey was going to go back, but she was, you know, going to drop everything and protect Rachel. And I think she even mentioned Rachel in her phone conversation to Donna, like, you know, she needs special care. Please take care of my baby. So I like that they still have that bond. So that was great. Other stuff happened in this episode that was fairly entertaining. I really enjoyed Rose. But a lot of my really enjoyment, I like Rose's scenes and then Corey's storyline, I think, is the gist of my likes.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. I really like the... Do you hear my echo? Okay, I think it's gone. I really like the...
I was going to say, if you hear it, that's what matters.
I really like the Jason Gar... Rachel fight, the three fight with the blindfold. I thought that was really, really cool and really well done. Rachel scaring the shit out of Jason was just because he's such an asshole. I was just like, that's okay. Let him, like, have a little fear. I really also liked all of the Corey stuff. I felt like it was the most grounded part of the episode and also, like, had a lot of layers to it. It gave us insight into who she was, you know, how much she seems to dislike all the Tamaran rules and what goes on her home planet, but it also offered up, like, it was kind of a clash and a combination of old Corey versus new Corey, like who she was and who she is now. And I really liked that evaluation of her, because she got to hang out with somebody who did know who she was prior to when we met her. And I liked that her and Fide's relationship was, like, really sweet, but also really, like, filled with, like, sexual tension. Like, yeah. You know that they knew each other and there was a thing and it was something that he came all this way to, you know, bring her back because he knew that no one else would have been able to, which I thought was nice. And it was, like, familiar but new at the same time. So all of that was great. And I agree that it was a little bit weird that she had no memory of who she was last season, and now she's just like, yes, I know everything and everyone and my sister.
I have all memories. Yeah.
Yeah. But I appreciated all of that content because I was worried that we weren't going to really get to see her this episode, or, like, we'd see one scene and, you know, she'd be have been kidnapped and we won't know anything. But it was really, like, a nice walk down memory lane and offered us a whole new, you know, a ton of new information, which was great. I loved the moment between her and Rachel, specifically, like, that phone call. It was, you know, Rachel calling her mom, telling her that, like, she basically doesn't feel comfortable telling Dick certain things, but she's like, she really trusts and opens up to her, and that Rachel will only be okay if, you know, both her parents are together in the same place and they can all be a family again.
Call off the divorce.
She is Karen Trapp.
Yes, exactly. So I thought that was really sweet, because I feel like Rachel has been, she's scared and she's being faced with, like, a lot of burdens, but she also knows that there's a lot of other things going on with Titans, and she doesn't feel comfortable going to Dick at this time.
She's never had, like, a home, right? And so this is the first kind of attempt at a home family. And then, like, all of the old Titans are, like, moody and in their feelings and, like, threatening to leave at every second. So,
yeah, exactly. It's like being, you know, in a place where you're just like, you know, everyone's just fighting and you don't want to be a part of that. So you go to find the comfort that you, you know, you feel great in, make you feel all better. And I really liked Donna's instincts. Cause like you have this old Titans team coming back together because there's a threat, but at the same time, she is the one who's like, no, I don't think that this is a good idea because you know what happened last time. Like we got fucked over and you're just going into this without thinking about all of the consequences with not just like the old team, but all the new kids as well. And I really liked that she was kind of really the level-headed one and it was calling Dick out on his shit. Mm-hmm. I also liked her conversation with Corey, like you said, Jess, about her kind of feeling like they were okay all of a sudden, you know, now that Corey was okay. Because I was a little bit put off that in the beginning, Donna's just like, yeah, she just went to Florida. I was like, you know, she didn't go to Florida. Yeah. How come no one's asking about this girl? Why would you just leave?
Right. It was very weird. Yeah.
So I'm glad that she got that call and like that was settled, even though it was like a really odd moment. I think those were like, that was the gist of what I liked. I really liked that Corey, even though she got like, she got to her ship, but she got that phone call from Rachel, but she didn't let Fide go back to Tamaran to go get, because he told her he's going to die if he goes back without her. So she left him there. She's like, hey, there's a lot of food.
Yeah.
You know, you're good. I'll be back. Yeah. So we know he'll show up again, but he's not like, you know, sentenced to death or anything.
Right. Is that y'all done with your likes?
Yes, ma'am.
I think so.
I'm trying to think if we liked anything that wasn't, you know,
Corey related.
The Corey? The Corey storyline?
Well, yeah, the new best girl, Rose.
Yeah. I did like Rose, like I already said. I liked her little fight scene with Dick. It was cool that they were kind of evenly matched. And because, you know, I was hating on Dr. Light, and I do hate him. But I liked one thing he said. I think it was him. When Slade was like, oh, I'm glad we see eye to eye or something. And then Dr. Light was like, oh, because you only have one. It was like, LOL. Okay. So that was good job saying that line. Yeah.
I actually did like their scenes together. Like the villains kind of plotting their revenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. I added to your life. But yeah, overall, like what I was really invested in was the Corey storyline. I really loved production.
You're breaking up.
Fide.
You're breaking up a little bit. Go back to the Corey storyline.
Am I breaking up now?
Nope.
Overall, I really liked the Corey storyline. I really enjoyed her interactions with Fide, and I mean, they felt really natural. I felt like you could understand their backstory in their scenes. And so when she was like, oh, the only dude I slept with, the only dude in my whatever it's called, you know, protector man I slept with, I was believable. I was like, yeah, I totally read that in your interactions previous to now. And I like you said, that there was an alienness about him, like the moment when she says that, you know, he has to prove himself basically to be worthy to take her back. And then he's like, awesome, I will steal this necklace for you. That seems correct. So yeah, I enjoyed that. I just feel like, I don't know, like this is the kind of stuff that I have been waiting for to see with Corey and Dick that they have not provided like from day one. Like that's what they should have been doing, how they should be setting them up. We should have an episode like that for them, etc. But obviously they can do it. It is possible. They just did it. So yay. And I really liked, I wish that she had not had amnesia last season, and I don't know why. I don't think it was necessary, because I think that she could have come always with the purpose of finding the, you know, Antichrist, basically, that's going to be the one that's going to explode their world, and then just not have known it was Rachel.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see why that wouldn't have worked just as well, because it's so natural that, of course, she does know about her freaking planet. And even now, like, that she remembers it. It's not like she was looking for it. Like, I don't even know what was going on. Whatever. This sounds like dislikes. But basically, what I'm saying is I like the way that she reacted towards her planet in this episode. Like, now it feels like she has a reason why she's not going back, right? Because even though her mission is complete, there's no reason why she should stay. And clearly, she's not staying for her people because she abandoned them. But there is clearly a reason that she doesn't want to go back. And it has to do with Blackfyre, presumably. So I like that. Everything that they did, I liked. I, like you said, I love the Donna conversation because I was so glad that she was checking in. You know, they were checking in and being like, oh, hey, I did not go to Florida. I have a thing I had to do. Oh, my God, you're boating someone? That's so happy. I'm so happy for you. See you later. So, yeah, they were really cute. But what I really, really loved was the Rachel and Corey storyline and how we see that their bond is really strong, that we see that Rachel does really, like, want her around, need her, and also sees her as a good, like, a good influence and as someone that can help stabilize her. And that Corey also has that same, like, you know, she wants to be with Rachel when Rachel needs her. She doesn't have any hesitation in letting What's-His-Face go, even though she had no hesitation beforehand. Like, she was, she didn't need to stay with them, but as soon as she hears that they want her, then she's very naturally wants to be with them. So I like, so I think that's nice. I feel like that feels, that feels like a real family thing.
When back to her conversation with Donna, when she's, Donna was like telling her a little bit, like, you know, got some stuff going on. She's like, do you need me? Like, she asked, like, do you need to come? Because I think she would have, like, went right then as well.
Right, right. So that does, like, in that sense, they do already feel like a family, which is good. I did not like how it turned out, obviously. But I guess Gar, like, being willing to follow Jason into stupidity is very Gar of him. So I guess I like that. And I think, I guess, liked is a strong word. But I appreciated people trying to tell Dick, hey, sometimes information is good. And sometimes you should not do things the same way you did them last time when they turned horribly. So think about that. And it, while it telegraphed what the ending of this episode would be, it does, I think, set up a good arc for Dick that he can't do things the way Batman does them. He can't do things the way that however Titans did them before. He can't keep trying to do that, you know. Insanity is repeating the same things and expecting different outcomes. So,
yeah.
Come on, Dick.
I forgot to mention, too, that I like the sense that of the new, you know, the younger kids like Gar and Rachel are definitely, they definitely feel like the glue that's kind of holding this team together. In the sense that, like, they have a good head on their shoulders, even though, like you said, Gar did something stupid too because he followed Jason. But like he was trying to like make he was trying to like keep him out for him. Like,
exactly. Yeah, right, Jason's the one lacking a good head, and Gar was trying to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Don't blame my son. But yes, like, it's true.
I guess we could talk about a little bit like the dynamic of like the younger Titans, because you had like Rose and Rachel also had that. Really nice conversation.
Oh yeah, they had that nice Bad Dads Club combo, which was indeed the title of our episode. I did like that moment. I liked that they were able to find common ground with that, and like just that they treated each other with respect, and like that you see, you know, they're wanting to make a connection. So it was nice.
And I think with even with Jason, even though he was being dumb the whole episode, it was very like on brand. I feel for his like character development in the sense that of the younger Titans, he's like clearly the one with, like, the most experience. And I feel like it reminds me of, like, Young Justice. And I can't remember which Young Justice member it was. One of them was, like, really... I think it was Roy. That was all, like, I don't need this shit. I'm not a Young Justice member. Like, bring me up to the Justice League.
Right.
Why am I here? He's like, so that's kind of, like, how Jason is at the moment and what leads him to do the stupid things that he did. So... I feel like it's a good kind of story for him, or like a way to kind of break him in a sense and to adapting to the new program of the Titans rather than trying to just like jump in full force because he thinks that he is at a place where he's not yet. So if he's still alive and if they do that.
Yes, if he's still alive. I'm sure he is.
Of course he's still alive. But yeah.
So yeah, those likes. So what did not spark joy? What do we wish to clear out of the clutter of our lives?
I feel like overall this was a decent episode, so there's nothing that sparked intense unjoy or intense like hatred or whatever. But just in general, things not related to Corey seem to kind of spin its wheels and not really move forward in the most part. There's a lot of kind of waiting around and... Hold on. Shadow!
Sir, be quiet.
There's a lot of kind of like spinning its wheels and not really, you know, going anywhere. And it felt a little bit flashback to the Flash in the sense that everyone's kind of stuck in the tower and having conversations and not really doing much. So yeah, I mean, and that kind of made it more boring. And then of course, in, you know, all the little flashbacks are interesting or whatever, but if we don't really learn anything new, and so there's not really much interest for me there. Like, I know that something happened because y'all said something happened last episode, so the fact that we're still dealing with stuff happening and not a lot of extra information on what that stuff might be or how Deathstroke is related to it, I don't know, sparked less joy than other parts of the episode. But I think overall, and I mean, I don't even like hate Dr. Light like Tati does, but yeah.
Yeah. I hear the echo. I did not like Dr. Light. I thought there was just, I don't know what it was about him. He just kind of reminded me of Hank in a different costume. Like the attitude that came with him, just didn't scream Dr. Light to me. So it was just like really awkward to watch him be, you know, just in his conversations with Slade and then later on in trying to take on the Titans. It just like felt off to me. So I don't know how much more we're going to be seeing him. He just didn't seem like a proper adversary to the team.
Yeah.
Versus like what Slade was doing.
With even with Slade and Dr. Light, the one thing I will say is that like their whole plan is basically fuck with the Titans. I'm like, don't y'all have other things to do?
Yeah, yeah, that
like
was a weak
kind of like plan. Like, so what is the real motivation? Because you know, Deathstroke has to have something. Like, Dr. Light is just like a lackey at this point. But what is the real end goal for Deathstroke, and why he needs to fuck with the Titans to do that?
Yeah, I just think it was a little. I know it's only the third episode, but it was a little bit lazy in the sense that, like you said, they were just wanting to fuck with the Titans. But I feel like if we had seen more of Slade going out and having conversations with, I don't know, other people he knows, other villains, whoever, then we could see what his intent is. Because this guy didn't just like see Jason on TV and was just like, yeah, I'm just going to fuck with them for like 10 episodes. Yeah. That makes no sense to me. And so he's such a powerful villain. He's such a formidable villain. And he has all of these resources. We saw where he lives and his butler or whatever. So obviously he's like the Batman of villains in this instance. So if he has all of these resources at his disposal, like there's much better things that he could be doing than just tracking down a bunch of kids he fucked with in the past and trying to like fuck with them again. It makes no sense.
There's like unfinished business there, but he's not telling us what that unfinished business is. And the Titans aren't telling us what that unfinished business is. So it's just like,
especially when he apparently like finished them off so nearly completely. Like, I don't understand what victory there is to be gained that's left. Is he just like real mad the building's open again? Like,
yeah. I don't know. I hope that we have more clarity in the future, but in this episode, it just didn't sit right with me. Also, just Dick in general. I know that last season we complained that they were going really hard on, you know, I'm not going to finish that sentence. They were going too hard on Dick, damn it. But you know, they were driving home and all the darkness that lives in him and his storyline, and he got a lot of attention. But three episodes into this season, I still don't feel like he's really going anywhere. We know he's going to become Nightwing. We know that that's his transition. We know people keep dropping hints. It's like, if you're not Robin, who are you? We get it. But I feel like he's still stuck in some kind of limbo, and he's not really progressing as a character. Like, he's too busy either like defending his decisions to keep Rose around or trying to train the team, but there's no focus on like where he's going as a person. So I feel like everybody else is kind of getting little things and he's not having those moments except for like his conversations with Bruce, which tell us nothing except that, oh, Bruce, you were right. I'm going to do the same thing. So I don't know. It's just weird. And then there's
a little bit in his like in his training scenes with Rose, but it does feel like he's kind of stretched in too many different directions and there's not really, I don't know. They're spreading him too thin, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And then finally, I think for me, what didn't really work or what just continues to not work is the Dick, or not the Dick Don, because I don't want that. The Don Hank stuff. It just seems like from last episode, we went from Hank giving Don an ultimatum to him saying that, yeah, maybe he wants to get back into this business because he misses it. And I'm just like, I don't understand.
Like, how did you get to that point, Hank?
Yeah, especially like he was saying, oh yeah, you know, you didn't tell me, you lied, you did all these things. And then he's just hopping back on the bandwagon too. So I don't understand what happened in that transition. Was it just like he got a taste of danger? Even though he's like at the very beginning of the episode, he thought it was stupid that they were there and that great, they have to deal again with Slade, and that didn't sit well with him. And then by the end of the episode, his mind completely changed, and I don't understand how that happened. So
and
it's just like,
I don't want you to be a hero.
Yeah. I was like, so it felt like they were ready for a breakup in that moment, but then they're not going there yet. And this has happened twice, and I'm concerned, especially now that the showrunner has said they're going to revisit flashbacks of Dick and Dawn, and I don't like it. I don't like where this is going. So it's just bizarre to me. And it's just that they're not compelling enough. Like, there's nothing about them yet that is just really interesting in the sense that they should keep hammering in the story. You know, I think that they should try to like allow the other characters to flourish a little more and like push them slightly to the background until they can figure their shit out.
This is like high key gossip, but like, you remember how we were talking about the whole Anna, Minka, Connor situation? They had like a little falling out, and this is just me like stringing out, connecting dots out of the sky and then like forcing them together. But it felt, just knowing like all of this Dick Don stuff is still happening, I'm wondering if that kind of had something to do with it, in the sense that it's very kind of what happens in shows when you the bait and switch kind of thing, and that maybe Anna was talking about it and Minka didn't think it was that big of a deal, or she just kind of like brushed it off, and that kind of led to something. This is high key like my speculation and what I think happened, just because I don't like what's happening with Dick and Don, because we don't really know and they're fine now. But to me,
yeah, it's especially like weird because
it seems like they're putting a lot of focus on Dick and Don. And if I was Anna, and like with Dick and Corey's relationship being put on the back burner for Dick and Don, even though it's my friend, I'm like, you know, this is kind of weird. Yeah. Anyways,
and it's especially concerning in canon where Mayako. It's especially concerning in canon because, like you said earlier, Dick has not shown any kind of major reaction toward Corey leaving, Corey presumably just ghosting Donna, and even later on, you know, like he never brings her up. He didn't call her before. He didn't call Donna before. It's just like a weird transition for their relationship to just forget about this woman whom you had spent a lot of time with and you had sort of had like a team with, and then she's not there, and it's like it doesn't matter to you. So that's just strange.
Right.
Especially if they want to like
when she does come back, and presumably immediately in the next episode, what or if there is any kind of reaction there.
Yeah. However, I do think that like it's been 3 episodes now, and aside from like an ambiguous scene in the first episode, it is kind of like clear that it's not a relationship they prioritize.
Right.
And I think that was clear in season 1 too. It's never been a relationship they prioritize.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because it's a very big relationship, you know. it's one that fans know very well, so there's no reason. And you have both characters there. There's no reason not to address it. I don't remember. I don't know anything about Dove in the comics. So I don't even know if she has a relationship with Dick in the comics. But from the moment that they introduced her, they obviously had more feelings, thoughts, questions, concerns about this unnecessary love triangle than they ever did about Corey and Dick. So I just don't really know where that came from. Like, what inspired them to do that?
Minka Kelly, probably. Just the
fact that they have her
as an actress.
Yeah. I don't guess. Yeah. I don't know. But it's also one of my dislikes. I agree with everything that you guys have said on, not necessarily in terms of speculation. I don't know what went down there.
No, I don't know. That's just me self-inserting my speculation.
And I don't know what Connor would be like. I agree with Minka on this thing that has nothing to do with me. But I do agree that, like, the focus, it feels like the way that they've placed the focus is awkward. It's uneven. I don't know. And it doesn't do anyone any favors. It certainly doesn't do Hank and Don as a couple of favors. Like, I feel like it's a couple we could easily root for if they actually had made them devoted to each other instead of, like, look how in love they are, but also randomly Dick Shadow here. They're going to measure their dicks. I'm like, okay, I don't understand what's happening right now. But that aside, I also agree with and like what you guys said about your dislikes relating to Dick's development and how he's becoming Nightwing. I think that one of the big issues with Titans story writing is the way that they think that just repeating a thing makes it so. You know, like, it's a narrative arc if I keep repeating that Dick is no longer Robin and he has to become something else. And then one day that something else will be Nightwing and we're going to be like, wow, what a story. I was like, that's not what a story is, actually. that's not how it works. And it's kind of similar to what they're doing with Rachel, I think, that it's just like, there's something inside me because of my dad. I did this thing, and now darkness is upon me. And I'm like, is it? Is darkness upon you? Wouldn't anyone react to Jason that way? Let's be honest. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a little bit like, all right, sure. You like telling and not showing is what I feel they're doing. Like, especially the big tell is, or even in this case, not telling, is whatever the fuck happened between Slade and Dr. Light and the Titans. Like, I don't, you just keep repeating that a big thing happened, but just saying that over and over again doesn't make me, like, more curious about what that big thing was. It certainly doesn't reveal anything relating to that big thing.
This is where the flashbacks would be helpful.
Exactly. You should do the flashbacks first. Give us that moment so then we know what we're dealing with, you know?
Right.
It doesn't help that there's no dramatic irony if we're just as in the dark as the new Titans are. Like, oh, they don't know what they're stepping into. Good. Neither do I. Wow. I can't wait for you to tell me. But it's just, whatever. I don't know. I just don't think it's well constructed. And I don't understand why. I feel like it's something they've done before, too. Like, when they're like, oh, the thing that happened between us. Last season, they were saying that. And then, like, episode 9 or something, we got some freaking ass Hank and Don flashbacks that I was like, who asked for this now? Is this what we needed? You couldn't have given us this 6 episodes ago and then just moved on. So, I don't know. I don't think that they need to live like that. And I wish that they would not. Now, I also... Jason, I agree. What he's doing is in character. So yes, at least there's that. But it's very annoying. And I wish he wouldn't drag Gar into it. Let Gar have his own damn storyline instead of just playing second fiddle to some person's dumb storyline. So I don't like that. I don't know why Jason thought that he could stop Slade alone. I know that as soon as, was it Dawn, comes in and is like, if you don't tell them, then they bad things are going to happen. And that's what it is, right? I'm supposed to think like, oh, yes, Jason went to face off against Slade / Dr. Light specifically because Dick did not explain exactly what happened before. But Jason should also just be smart enough not to do that, period, considering that the dude nearly murdered his own daughter, right? Girl's missing an eyeball. So Jason just thinks that he is superior to her for whatever reason. Just because he's, like, been on the sidelines cheering while Batman beat up villains. I don't know. So yeah, I was not as impressed with the inter-Titans politicking as I was with the Coriander and Tamaran and Robbie Jones storyline. I just forgot that character's name. So
The day.
The day. Thank you. Well, the actor's name is Robbie Jones. And he is great. That I would like to see changed. And I'm really hoping that we're going to get more of the core Titans together now that Corey is coming back into the fold. And that Dick will, you know, remember her absence. So yeah, as nice as it is that Rachel is the one that was like reaching out to her, because I really love that dynamic, I do feel like
like if he's like low key salty that she didn't come, or like I don't know what it is. And so I feel like when we finally see them together in a scene, maybe I'll figure out why what the deal is. But
right, like what they were trying to tell us. Yeah. I feel like we're pantomiming all the signs to you. I'm like, I can't read what you're doing. I can't tell. Do it harder. So yeah, I don't know. Anyway, those are the likes, dislikes, and should we now perhaps do a Lady with Gumption, which we have not done all season yet? Shall we retroactively name Ladies with Gumptions, or just for this episode?
Who would it be for this episode?
I would say Corey for this episode. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, for being willing first to go back to her planet and face whatever is going on there. For the sake of an old friend, and then for being willing to put him in his
to with drop a everything.
Year supply of food to go help Rachel.
Well, I did think it should have gumption to basically turn down a queenship and not go back to Tamaran, and then also...
Yeah, because for whatever reason it doesn't sit right with her.
Yeah, and then, you know, the gumption to, like, whenever someone's calling and they need her. Like, she's kind of very, like, a on-her-own kind of character, but if people need her, then she won't hesitate to go and help them, even if that means locking her ex-boyfriend in a ship of 10 years worth of food and saying, I'll be right back! So precisely. I agree with that. Obviously, last week would have been Rose, I think.
Yes, last week would have been Rose.
And the first episode, I guess, Rachel for defeating her dad.
Yeah.
You're Rachel, yes, for defeating her dad.
Rachel, Rose, and Corey. Great. Ladies with Gumptions 1, 2, and 3.
All right, wonderful. Great success. So, I think that is all for this moment. Unless we have predictions. Do we have any predictions for what will happen next?
That hopefully it'll get better.
I think my prediction is that, you know, hopefully we're going to see a lot more of Tamaran. Like, if Corey's going back to help the Titans, and so while they're doing that, and then all of a sudden these other unrelated villains start showing up, and they're like, who is this? And Corey's like, oh my god, they're from Tamaran, they're coming for me. Because basically, like, since Fide is not going back, he said they're going to send more people. So I'd be interested to see, like, what that army of alien invaders looks like, because I think that would be,
and that might also be what pushes the Jericho episode to 7 or whatever it is, right? Like, there's got to be something in the meantime, one would expect. So
actually, since they're going to explore flashbacks to the Titans team, I wonder if they're going to explore flashbacks between what happened with Corey and her sister, since she's the one who supposedly sent Fide to begin with.
I would like to see, like, a flashback of Tamaran to see, like, what exactly it is about this culture that does not sit right with Corey.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Well, there's some kind of, like, social stratification, right? Where she was like, yeah, wow, a marriage between us here would be totally fine, as opposed to there.
I feel like, was it like that in the comics, that there was this kind of, like, class structure? Because I thought it was a little bit more free.
I'm pretty sure it's the opposite. It's more free, in the comics. Yeah. And in the comics, she's like, everyone loves everybody, and there's, like, not war like this. Like, what are y'all doing, weirdos? But here, I guess it's not that.
Yeah, I think they tried to make it more like she wants to be more an individual, and that's what Earth gives her, versus, like, trying to conform
right
to her past stuff.
So that'll be.
But I feel like with Tamarin, there's got to be some kind of like strong like, military structure. We are the conqueror type thing going on that she doesn't want to. Because like, why? What reason would there be not to go back and be a queen?
Yeah. So. Agreed. Yeah, because if you're queen, can't you change stuff? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what the issue is.
Or she doesn't want to do what she would have to do if she became queen or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's why she's existing, so.
But these are questions that are interesting to answer. Unlike, what happened with Slade? How bad did he beat them up?
Yeah, and they shouldn't waste such a great actor, so.
True, true, true. I'm looking forward at least to seeing his dynamic with his kids. I think that'll be interesting. Because obviously, I don't believe that he killed Jericho, you know? The question is, like, what was going on there? Was there, like, is there a misunderstanding? Or what did Jericho do that would make Slade maybe want to hurt him? You know? We'll see. All right. So, you can catch us at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com, at DCTVGumption, and also at ladieswgumption@gmail.com. And don't forget to keep listening to us on either Patreon or eventually on Podomatic. Bye.
Bye. Bye.